Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
From Iowa Public Radio News, this is Under the Golden Dome. This is the final weekly podcast about the 2019 Iowa legislative session. I'm John Pimble. Gambling has been legal in the state of Nevada since 1949. Since then, other states added or expanded gambling options.
The bill before us legalizes both sports wagering and fantasy sports.
In May 2018, the United States Supreme Court made a ruling allowing the rest of the 49 states to add sports wagering. So far, 8 states have done this, and Republican Representative Bobby Kaufman wants Iowa to be next.
Right now, there is a rampant black market going on where tens of millions of Americans are betting on sports and fantasy, and they do not currently have the legal right to do so. I believe this is a problem that needs addressed. I believe that sticking our head in the sand and doing nothing is not an option. And so when tasked with putting in reasonable regulations, this bill taxes the act of sports wagering at 6.75%.
Some states have taxes as high as 18%. Democratic Representative Mary Mascher says Iowa should be at 10%.
The 6.75 makes us equal to what happens in Vegas, and it seems to me that we ought to have a little bit more revenue coming into the state and being beneficial for the people who are going to be here in Iowa and could benefit from those dollars.
But Representative Kaufman says a higher tax will defeat the purpose of legalizing sports betting.
Because the entire point of this bill is to bring sports wagering out of the black market. A higher tax rate makes it a lot more amenable to continue to work with your local bookie than it does to do this legally in casinos. So I'm proud of the fact that we have an industry standard tax rate of 6.75%, because that's exactly what it's going to take to get people to stop doing this in the shadows and start doing it in the light.
Representative Mascher questions Kaufman's claims that legalizing sports betting will stop people from illicit gambling.
Representative Kaufman, you have absolutely no evidence whatsoever that this will bring it out of the dark. And I think you know that. There has been no studies done, nothing to prove that. I do not believe increasing this from 6.75 to 10% is going to create that problem.
Mascher's amendment for a higher tax is voted down. Republican Representative Ted Gassman opposes legalizing sports betting. He says just because the U.S. Supreme Court makes it possible for a state to do so doesn't mean that it should.
We have 19 casinos, a lottery, scratch tickets, and maybe some other things. I don't know, because I don't do any of them. As I understand, horse racing is a dying gamble. Dog racing is dead, and the casinos are struggling. What a great way to drag in the next group of gamblers, sports betting. The odds makers have a tight grip on this money. You will be a loser.
This bill will allow bets to be made in one of Iowa's 19 casinos, but they can also be made online. A person would have to register at a casino first, but after that, they could make bets on a phone app. Republican Representative Sandy Salmon opposes gambling expansion, especially allowing betting through the internet.
We will now have legal online gambling in addition to brick and mortar gambling, which brings the availability and access to gambling to a whole new level, bringing it into every home and every smartphone into the state. Thus, it's increasing its danger and addictive power exponentially.
Democratic Representative Vicki Lensing says it's obvious to her sports gambling is already here in Iowa, so why not regulate it?
I look at it in a way as a runaway train, but we're not going to stop it, so we should address it. And I think this bill makes a good effort at addressing it. But it's all those what-ifs that I am not willing to take a chance on. Pardon the pun. I know we all come here with different reasons for supporting or not supporting this bill. And my support was to make it the best that we could get it. And I think maybe we're there. I think this is the best it could be this year. Does this mean this will be the only time we address it? Probably not.
This bill allows a person over the age of 21 to bet on the outcome of games, but not an in-play event during the game. This bill also allows bets to be placed on fantasy sports. This is where someone creates an imaginary team with real players. The real-world performance of those players is applied to the imaginary or fantasy team. The inclusion of fantasy sports is why Democratic Representative Kirsten Running Marquardt supports this legislation.
I don't know how many of my friends and neighbors and family and people I know who whisper to me about sports betting, about what they're doing and how they're doing it, and when they're putting money into these accounts that they just sort of hope and pray and wish and think, you know, maybe this is a safe account to put their money in. And this, I believe, puts fantasy and sports betting in a place where it's safe and legal, where we can go after people who do the wrong thing with Iowans' monies when it comes to sports betting.
During this debate, Democrats and Republicans are not aligned on party lines, a point Republican Representative Terry Baxter makes.
I appreciate this debate tonight. This has probably been the best debate that I've seen this year here, and there's some odd bedfellows here in this debate. It's very exciting to be here. At the beginning of the session, when I knew this was coming up, I put up a newsletter, and as I put that out, I said, I really don't have a horse in this race. And I said, what's your opinion? I went to my constituents and asked them. Then at every forum I went to, I asked the question, where does this group stand on sports betting? And it was very interesting to me that not one person stood up and said, I really want sports betting. The vast majority said we're neutral or opposed to this bill. And I'll just stand up and say this. There will be negative effects that come from this. When I got into the legislature 5 years ago, this is my third session, I told those who are in the betting industry that I will not do anything to expand gambling in Iowa. They said, that's just fine. We don't want it expanded any further. We think there's already enough competition. There's enough of it out there. But all of a sudden, I find it interesting when the casinos have the opportunity to make some more money off something, they're all standing up and say, we're ready for this. We want more of it. I'm going to stand up and say there's going to be a social consequence to this. There will be negative things that happen.
This bill passed in the Senate with no debate. Floor manager of this bill, Representative Bobby Kaufman, closes this 75-minute House debate by saying legalizing it is better than ignoring it.
Hoping that people get help when they're placing bets in dark alleys with bookies whose collection method is a threat to kneecap you isn't good for anybody. And Representative Orth, I respect your opinion greatly, consider you a friend, but when it comes to assigning this bill the term quasi-nefarious greed, my friend, I respectfully disagree with you. That is not my intent whatsoever. I think that this bill will allow the people that need help to get help, and I think it will give those, which are many, that want this freedom the opportunity. So with that, Mr. Speaker, I move the bill.
The sports betting bill passes 67 to 31. 14 Republicans vote against, but it passes with the support of 29 Democrats. The Iowa Gaming Association runs Iowa's 19 state casinos. They are to be in charge of operating sports betting. If it becomes law, the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission will adopt rules to implement this bill. They would then set a date for it to start in Iowa, which could be in August. But first, this bill would have to be signed by Governor Kim Reynolds, and she hasn't been clear on whether or not she supports it.
What we're going to do, we're going to do the same process that we do with any legislation that passes. My policy team and I will sit down and we'll review the bill at hand, and then we'll make a decision moving forward.
One bill she did sign that went through the legislature this year and is now law is about agriculture facilities. The law prohibits entering an agriculture facility under false pretenses with the intent of doing harm to the facility or causing harm to the reputation of the business. This includes undercover journalism and could include whistleblowers. This is similar to a law from 2012 that was more restrictive. A court struck down the 2012 law in January. The ruling stated it violates the First Amendment. The state is currently appealing that decision. Opponents have called this the ag-gag law. In March, legislators passed a bill opponents call Ag-Gag 2.0, and it became law after the governor signed it on March 14th. The American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa indicated at the time if it became a law, there would be a lawsuit.
This morning, we filed a suit against Iowa's new ag-gag law, which we're calling Ag-Gag 2.0.
This week, in a building just a few blocks away from the Capitol, ACLU's Iowa's legal director, Rita Bettis Austin, announces the lawsuit.
It criminalizes using deception to gain access to an agricultural production facility or employment at that facility with the intent to cause harm. But deception is defined to include both overt misstatements, affirmative misstatements, as well as omissions, things like not correcting an impression. And I should say harm is defined to include mere economic injury or other undefined injuries. So that would include harms to a business's reputation, for example, even if based on absolutely truthful statements about the business. And these undercover investigators, whether they are workers who are looking to blow the whistle on labor violations, or they're looking to pose as buyers of dogs to gain access to puppy mill facilities and investigate abuses inside of those, or they're looking to expose unsafe food handling practices or animal rights abuses, would not have access to these facilities if they were to disclose their intention of blowing the whistle.
Supporters of this law say it protects livestock from biosecurity threats, but Rita Bettis Austin says there are already laws in place for this.
That criminalize fraud, trespass, biosecurity issues. There are laws, for example, that prohibit tampering with food products already.
She says it's about core and fundamental speech rights.
What we're talking about are exposés, truthful statements about what's going on with these businesses and facilities that may lead to reputational harms because consumers don't like what's going on inside of them.
Opponents of this bill often point to videos shot in livestock facilities where animals have been tortured or abused. The new law is still in effect during the lawsuit. However, the ACLU says they are seeking an injunction that would prevent the law from being enforced until there is a ruling. This is the weekly legislative podcast, Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pemble. There is always a surprise at the State House.
I found myself increasingly uncomfortable with the stance of my party on the vast majority of high-profile issues.
This week, one of the surprises is a legislator leaving one party for another. Representative Andy McKean is changing his party registration from Republican to Democrat.
I know that I have disappointed and angered at least some of my caucus in the process. It is not a role I relish, and perhaps I've been unfair to both my caucus and to myself by continuing to serve in it. I appreciate the members of my caucus, respect their passion for what they believe in, and I'm sorry that I haven't been able to be a better team player.
Andy McKean has been a Republican since he took office as a representative in 1978. He was elected to the Senate in 1991 and retired from the legislature in 2002. In 2016, he decided to run for an open Republican House seat. Since returning, McKean says the State House is more partisan. As he looks to the elections in 2020, he says he is unable to stay in the Republican Party.
I believe that it is just a matter of time before our party pays a heavy price for President Trump's reckless spending and short-sighted financial policies, his erratic, destabilizing foreign policy, and his disregard for environmental concerns. Furthermore, he sets, in my opinion, a poor example for the nation, and particularly for our children, by personally insulting, often in a crude and juvenile fashion, those who disagree with him, being a bully at a time when we're attempting to discourage bullying, his frequent disregard for the truth, and his willingness to ridicule or marginalize people for their appearance, ethnicity, or disability. I believe that his actions have coarsened political discourse, have resulted in unprecedented divisiveness, and have created an atmosphere that is a breeding ground for hateful rhetoric and actions. Some would excuse this behavior as telling it like it is and the new normal. If this is the new normal, I want no part of it.
Representative McKean's party affiliation on the legislative directory now says he's a Democrat. All of his committee assignments have been rescinded, including his chair position of the Ethics Committee. He is no longer on any committees, but next year, he will likely be assigned to some by the minority party. When big budget bills clear both chambers, it's an indication the end of the legislative session is near. 3 weeks ago, the Senate passed the Justice System Appropriations Bill. When it came before the House this week, there were changes of a few million dollars to the $583 million budget. But the biggest change is not about the money. It's about the Iowa Attorney General. As it comes before the Senate, floor manager Senator Julian Garrett explains.
The bill prohibits the Attorney General from prosecuting actions or proceedings outside of the state of Iowa or in the Iowa federal courts without approval of either the Executive Council, the legislature, or the governor.
Iowa's Attorney General is a Democrat. Tom Miller is the longest-serving Attorney General in the country. He just began his 10th fourth-year term after winning the 2018 election against a Libertarian opponent. There was not a Republican candidate. Democratic Senator Rob Hoeg objects to this policy piece in the budget concerning the Attorney General.
That would put unprecedented and really overreaching restrictions on the ability of our Attorney General to represent the people of Iowa.
Senator Hoeg says because the office of Attorney General is elected and not appointed, that office has independent authority.
It is a proposed statutory change that would hamstring and take away the independent authority of the Attorney General. Well, our Attorney General should have the discretion to make decisions about what lawsuits to participate based on what's right, what's the law, and what's in the best interest of Iowans.
Hoeg says this proposal would make Iowa the only state with this kind of restriction.
You've probably heard the news reports. Iowa sued President Trump over whatever it is.
State attorneys general often file lawsuits together. Last year, Iowa's attorney general was one of 50 suing a large bank for a violation of consumer protection laws. Attorneys general have also filed suits against President Donald Trump. General Miller is also part of some of those suits. One is about the Trump administration's treatment of migrants coming to the southern border of the United States. Senator Garrett questions why Miller has sued a U.S. president only recently.
2018-14 suits. How many do you suppose there were between 2000 and 2012? Zero. Obama didn't get sued at all.
Senator Garrett says it is not unreasonable for a state attorney general to sue a president.
That he ought to have a little bit of backing from, say, the governor, the legislature, or the executive council. He's got a lot of choices. If none of them want to join in, it's not unreasonable to me, it seems to me, to say that he shouldn't be doing this. He ought to be tending to his duties here in the state.
Democratic Senator Bill Dotzler objects to this proposal. Dotzler says he watched the Iowa House debate this bill a day prior.
And quite frankly, it made my blood boil. I mean, it's a blatant political move by a majority party who I feel is overreaching their bounds or drunk with power, because it's all about politics of trying to protect the president of this United States, who every day more evidence is coming out that, yes, he ought to be challenged in every court in this nation for the actions that he's made.
Aside from the Attorney General policy, the budget for the justice system is mostly a status quo from the previous year. It is around $13 million more, an amount Democratic Senator Rich Taylor says isn't enough.
This bill is inadequate for our correctional system. Again, we're going to see a lot of major problems in our prisons. This is not going to get any better. The House did help it a little bit, but to me, it's kind of like putting lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig, and that's what we've got here.
But the Senate had this debate earlier this month. Much of this discussion focuses on the new amendment concerning the Attorney General. Floor Manager Senator Garrett says most of the out-of-state lawsuits from the Attorney General have been good, but when it comes to the president...
We're talking about political activity on the part of the Attorney General at the national level. And I think that's a legitimate concern for us as legislators. We're representing the people here, and we're just telling the Attorney General, if you're going to play national politics, let's involve some other folks in that too. Don't just go off as the Lone Ranger and do your thing.
The Justice System Appropriations Bill passes the Senate on a party-line vote. It will go before the governor to be approved. The governor does have line item veto authority and has the option to eliminate the Attorney General aspect should she choose to do so. This is the weekly legislative podcast, Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pimble.
The House will be in order. Chair recognizes the gentleman from Dallas, Representative Hagenow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move to suspend the portion of Rule 75, which prohibits voting between midnight and 8 a.m.
There is a rule in the House of Representatives that says they can't debate in the middle of the night, but just about every rule can be suspended if the majority of the House votes to do so. And 53 representatives vote aye. And it starts a four-hour debate about property taxes that lasts until 3 a.m.
It shines a light on the budgetary process and the decision to set the levy rate on cities and counties.
Republican Representative Dennis Hite is the bill's floor manager.
So this amendment you see tonight is significantly different than the bill that we started with, the bill that's been amended, and the amendments that I've worked on that haven't even been filed, because this is where we're at tonight.
During the session, a bill about property tax change was met with stiff opposition from city and county officials. They stated it didn't allow local governments enough control. This amended bill that was released not long before this debate is less restrictive.
Every year when we get our new property assessment values in January, it takes those new assessment values along with last year's expenditures of the cities, and it comes up with a new effective tax rate.
Cities and counties set the property tax not just based on assessed property values, but also on their overall budget needs. It's just one of the many factors that determine what a new tax or levy will be. Other factors can include the population, was there money left over from the previous fiscal year, what are the infrastructure needs, or how many employees are working for the city or county. It's a very complicated system, and it isn't the same from one town and county to the next. Representative Hite says when a city or county body proposes how taxes will change for the next year, there should be a public hearing.
At that public hearing is where your city council, your board of supervisors, will have to take a vote on what the maximum property tax rate is they're going to have for the next budget year. It's as simple as that. If they want to go above that effective tax rate, no problem.
But if the rate will be more than a 2% increase from the last year...
requires a two-thirds majority. For most of our counties that have a three-person board, a two-thirds majority is the same as a simple majority. It's two out of three. Most of our city councils that have five members, that's what my city council had, it goes to four instead of three.
The bill requires publication in local newspapers of when these public hearings will happen. If the community has a social media presence or website, it would have to be posted there as well. These budgets are set between March and April. Part of a city and county budget includes paying to the state pensions, IPERS, and the fire and police retirement system, sometimes called 411. Democratic Representative Monica Kurth offers an amendment saying contributions to these funds can't be excluded.
Employer contributions are placed, is put into general services, and therefore is in competition with other public safety and municipal needs.
Representative Height asks Representative Kurth to yield to questions about her concerns for the pension programs. He begins by setting the scenario where a city doesn't vote to increase spending by more than 2%.
Does the city still have to pay IPERS?
Yes, they do. And so I already mentioned that one of the ways that they could pay their demanded contribution is by reducing the number of employees who are on IPERS or 411. So it puts the employees into battle against the needs to pay for the retirement systems that are demanded.
Well, there's no really battle. IPERS is required, correct? A city or county has to pay it.
However, if you have fewer employees, you don't have to pay as much IPERS or 411.
Well, that's just part of the budgetary process. Let's say a city's valuation goes down and they don't have as much tax revenue coming in. They may have to make that choice anyway. Isn't that correct?
Isn't it also true that cost of living increases each year? All the budgetary balances need to increase each year, and sometimes they exceed the 102%. And so what we're looking at is a battle between hiring enough people to handle the city's needs and the city's public safety and fire protection, and paying off the demanded pension that they're required to come up with.
Representative Kurth, costs do go up every year on average. I agree mm-hmm. with you. They go up for the taxpayer as well, is that correct?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Representative Kurth. Ladies and gentlemen, I would ask you to reject this amendment. This bill does nothing to IPERS. The benefits are still there. Nothing in here changes that. If you have IPERS, you're going to get the same benefits. Nothing in here changes that. The cities, the counties have to pay IPERS. Nothing in here changes that.
Through the middle of the night, Democrats continue to claim the pension systems are endangered. Representative Todd Pritchard, the minority leader, asks Representative Height to yield to questions.
The Trust and Agency Fund, we can agree that the Trust and Agency Fund is the fund that accepts the money and then remits the money for IPERS and pension.
Amongst other things, yes, Representative Pritchard. Okay.
But that's the money. It's kind of like the savings account for IPERS. It goes into the IPERS fund for the employees, correct?
That is one tool that the city has at their disposal. They are not required to use the Trust and Agency Fund.
Okay. Is the Trust and Agency Fund subject to the 2% cap?
It is subject to the 2% part where the two-thirds majority then has to vote. Yes.
Sure. So the Trust and Agency Fund, with your two-thirds supermajority vote as the bill's written, is subject to the cap?
If it goes above, yes, they have to have the two-thirds vote.
Okay. That's great. That confirms what I thought. Thank you very much for yielding.
Republican Representative Bobby Kaufman has made public statements this year that the Iowa House will not change IPERS. He reaffirms these comments during this debate.
You can say this bill changes IPERS over and over and over and over again. You're entitled to your own opinions, but you're not entitled to your own facts. IPERS is a required payment, a bill that cities and counties must pay. This bill before us in no way, shape, or form changes that.
Democrats argue that placing an amendment with language that specifies pension funding is safe would resolve their concerns. This amendment is voted down. So is an amendment that freezes property tax rates on people 65 years or older, or for those who are disabled. Democratic Representative Amy Nielsen talks about what happened in the state of New York, where annual growth for counties and cities was limited by 2%.
This has seriously constrained revenues and spending in counties and cities since its 2011 enactment. Between 2011 and 2016, as the national economy gradually improved, total spending by counties actually fell, with some services seeing extremely sharp declines. Education spending by counties declined 5%, social service spending dropped 8%, and spending on health services and community services fell a remarkable 21% and 25% respectively after adjustment for inflation.
Democratic Representative John Forbes argues the bill makes local control harder.
Well, what if some body above us was telling the state of Iowa that they could only have a 2% growth per year moving forward? How would we feel as a body? I don't think we would like it, being told how to run our business.
But floor manager Representative Hyde argues this plan isn't a cap because a body can vote to spend more than 2% with a supermajority vote.
We do have a provision that says if it's going to grow more than 2%, you need a two-thirds majority. And we've heard about how that's going to hamstring our cities, and it's not going to be good, and they're not going to be able to do the things they want. And we heard they're not going to pay IPERS, but we know that's not true. We also heard a lot of resolutions tonight. I think everybody said they were unanimous. So they can get a vote for a resolution that's unanimous. I don't think it's too much to ask that two-thirds vote to raise your taxes.
The bill passes in the House. Earlier it passed in the Senate. It is enrolled and can be signed into law by the governor. The day after the debate, the Twitter account for IPERS reads, "Regarding recently passed property tax bill SF634, this bill does not alter the employer's obligation to pay the employer portion of IPERS contribution as established annually under Iowa Code Section 97B.11. This bill does not affect a member's or retiree's pension." This is the final weekly legislative podcast for 2019 under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pemble. This session is budgeted for 110 days, but they are ending early on day 104. At the end, discussion centers on budget bills. But these bills can also include amendments about anything. The restriction of the Attorney General's power is an example of an amendment added to a budget bill. On the final day, Saturday, April 27th, the House starts with a rarely used procedure announced by Majority Leader Chris Hagenow.
I move that a time certain be set for the close of debate and that the House act on the following series of questions and all amendments filed to those questions no later than 1 p.m.
Time certain sounds just like what it is. It forces all bills and amendments to be voted on by that time. One of the bills that must be finished by 1 p.m. is the standings bill that allocates $3.9 billion. This includes funding for the Department of Education, Department of Management, and the Department of Revenue. This bill has an amendment changing how potential justices on the Iowa Supreme Court are considered. Right now, a judicial nominating commission of 16 forwards candidates to the governor for consideration. 8 of the members of this state commission are selected by the governor, 8 by a group of lawyers from the Bar Association. A senior justice from the Supreme Court chairs the commission. The Senate passed a bill a few months ago removing the lawyers from selecting nominees and turned that over to legislative leaders. It would have also removed a requirement that the Senate confirms these individuals by a two-thirds vote. That bill did not come before the House. Now a different version is attached to the standings bill. Republican Representative Stephen Holt explains.
It will remove the Supreme Court justice from the state nominating commission and provide one additional appointment to the governor. All of the governor's appointments will be subject to the same Senate confirmation process as currently exists in law. It will allow that the state commission will elect their own chair. It will change the term of the Chief Justice to every 2 years, with the first election to be conducted in the first meeting of odd-numbered years.
Right now, Chief Justice Mark Cady has held that role since 2011. The way it is set up now, he would have that position until he retires. This new change would only make the Chief Justice term 2 years. Democratic Representative Mary Wolf calls this amendment an opportunistic power grab.
Ladies and gentlemen, when the people in power take advantage of that power to change the rules or change the laws to give themselves even more power, that, ladies and gentlemen, is a power grab. This amendment proposes that we reform our current nationally respected, nonpartisan, merit-based judicial selection process, which process was crafted by a bipartisan group of legislators, approved by two consecutive General Assemblies, and voted into our state constitution by the citizens of Iowa over 40 years ago. And this amendment proposes that we fix that system by legislatively amending our state constitution to put political appointees in control of our state judicial nominating commission, the very commission that nominates attorneys to fill vacancies on our Supreme Court.
Representative Holt says this proposal is scaled back, but changing the current process is necessary.
We use the current process to give just a little more voice to the people through their elected governor. Representative Wolf, this is not a power grab. This is a majority party in this chamber exercising our authority when we recognize that changes are needed, and we work over a period of 6 months to arrive at a place where we try to address the concerns that have been expressed while at the same time addressing the problem.
The judicial nominating change passes, as does the standings bill in the House. It also passes in the Senate. The time isn't 1 o'clock yet, but there is one more bill where debate will be cut off at that time due to the time certain rule imposed. It's a bill for the Health and Human Services budget of $1.9 billion. This includes money for the Department of Public Health, Department of Veterans Affairs, and the biggest chunk is for the Department of Human Services. There are two amendments added to this bill. One targets eliminating federal funding for Planned Parenthood of the Heartland for sex education programs. They come in the forms of grants of around $260,000. Democratic Representative Heather Mattson opposes this change.
Your plan to prohibit Planned Parenthood from participating in Iowa's grant programs for sex education is short-sighted and petty politics at its worst.
Republican Representative Sandy Salmon says this federal funding for sex education can still be made available to other organizations.
This amendment will allow non-abortion providers to apply for the grant program for these contracts.
Another amendment to this bill blocks publicly funded health insurance from covering surgeries for transgender and intersex Iowans. It's a direct response to a recent Iowa Supreme Court ruling that said Medicaid must cover these surgeries under the current Iowa Civil Rights Act. Democratic Representative Liz Bennett does not support this effort.
If you believe that gender-affirming surgery is just cosmetic, you are not listening to the many transgender Iowans who have spoken out publicly about this treatment.
Debate is stopped at 1 o'clock, and the Human Health and Services budget, as amended, passes. Over in the Senate, they take up the medical marijuana bill that passed in the House a few weeks earlier. This is not part of a budget bill. It allows medical marijuana in the form of pills, creams, or drops to have THC measured not in percent, but by grams, 25 grams every 90 days. Republican Senator Brad Zahn supports this change and explains how some may receive more than 25 grams in a 90-day period.
The 25-gram limit is waivable in cases where the patient is terminally ill, and we've even defined that as expected to die within a year. And the provider states that the current limit is not effective at reducing pain.
This bill passes the Senate and can now be considered by the governor to be signed into law. And now, final speeches from the leaders close out this session. House Minority Leader Todd Pritchard.
While some progress was made this year, this body fell short of what was possible when session began back in January. There were a host of missed opportunities that would have improved the lives of everyday Iowans. Healthcare. There was some bipartisan progress on healthcare this year. There is some strong bipartisan support to protect children in abusive situations. Train more mental health professionals in rural areas and keep seniors safe in nursing homes. I'm also pleased we took the first step in creating a mental health system for children and made it easier for Iowans to get substance abuse treatment. Just a few weeks ago, however, we learned that 420,000 Iowans would be facing another healthcare disruption when UnitedHealthcare announced they were leaving Iowa's managed care program. It was just the latest upheaval in a system that needs a complete overhaul.
Speaker of the House, Linda Uppmeyer.
It's disappointing that today we've heard the same breathless defense of the status quo that we've heard for the last 3 years. Unlike those voting no today, we remain open to thoughtful consideration, to progress and new ideas. Doing things the same way, only because it has been done that way for a long time, is a disappointing disposition for Iowans to see. We reject adherence to the status quo. The people of Iowa sent us here to continue moving forward with a common sense agenda, smaller government that respects the hardworking taxpayers. Promises made, promises kept. This body should be proud of the work that has accomplished this session and know that Iowans stand with you. In closing, I want to thank everyone for their hard work this session. Everyone worked really hard. I want to thank the members of our caucus, the members of the Minority Caucus, all the leadership staff, clerk's office, LSA, our doormen, our pages, the people that keep this building looking wonderful, and even our press. Thank you for all your hard work.
And in the Senate, President Charles Schneider closes the year with a formal sign ID.
By virtue of House Concurrent Resolution 14, duly adopted, the date of April 27th, 2019, I declare the 2019 regular session of the 88th General Assembly adjourned, sine die.
With the fall of the gavel, that ends this year's legislative session, as well as this podcast series, Under the Golden Dome for 2019. I'm John Pemble. All 15 of these shows required a lot of help, the biggest coming from Iowa Public Radio's Statehouse reporter, Katerina Sestarik. We also had contributions from reporters Clay Masters, Kate Payne, and Grant Gerlach. Our talk show team also provided support, producers Caitlin Harrop, Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Catherine Perkins, and hosts Ben Kiefer and Charity Nebbe. The press pool at the Capitol held things together as well, especially Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson, who shares her years of experience at the State House with so many of us. This show's stories and scripts are edited by Iowa Public Radio News Director Michael Leland. I'm John Pemble, and I'll be back with this show in January 2020 for the second half of the 88th Iowa General Assembly. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.